Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. It is 4:08, 65 degrees on this Monday, May 5th, 2025. You can call or text 570-883-0098. Get involved with the conversation. Before we get started on our next story, let me key up some phone calls. We have Joe from Plains. Joe.
Hey, how you doing, Rob?
All right.
Hey, I was just made aware that there's a bill coming up that they're going to vote on, and it it is a bill on legalized marijuana, and Jim Haddock and Eddie DePaczynski will most likely vote for it, even though it it disqualifies a lot of young people from doing certain jobs, and then we hear the excuses that, you know, they, employers can't get qualified people. And I think that people should call up their representatives, especially the Democratic representatives, and put some pressure on them to vote to keep people keep people's intelligence in place.
What kind of jobs does it disqualify you from, Joe?
Well, truck driving, manufacturing. I mean, they all take drug tests. You know that.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it might be legal in Pennsylvania, but it's illegal to drive a truck like that, or it's illegal to do a lot of different jobs that that people should be qualified for. I mean, we've always had enough qualified people in this area to do those jobs. And all of a sudden, the excuse is out there that we don't have the people.
No, I think it should definitely be part of the just like there are warning on a pack of cigarettes. You know, there's warning on alcohol. You know, there should be some sort of warning saying these are the types of jobs that you will not be eligible for if you get a recreational marijuana card or buy recreational marijuana or test positive for recreational marijuana.
So you're in favor of legalizing marijuana then?
No, I'm not. I think that this...
Well, then you should say no. You know, I agree with you, and no excuses. No legalized marijuana. I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, we have a lot of people out there who are undereducated, and then we're gonna allow them to become lazy and stupid? Come on.
Well, I think if you also told these individuals that these are the things you won't be able to do if this passes and you do use this substance, it may sway a lot of people to say, well, then why make it legal? So that's why I'm saying that should be fully disclosed by these legislators now, saying, hey, you know, if they support this legislation, they should come out and say, yes, I support this legislation, but this is the type of work that you won't be able to do in the future if you take this stuff.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to say no. Let's keep it illegal, and let's make the penalties harsh enough so that people don't want to do it, and take it past the "I can't do the job" penalty, and more to the "We're going to get you off the streets if you keep doing the drugs."
Well, yeah,
you
have a governor that has counted on it to support his budget. You have a legislature that looks like the majority is going to support it. So, you know, are we past that at this point, Joe?
Well, we have a Senate that could shoot it down, and maybe we can get somebody like Jim Haddock, who's got a career in front of him, to say if people call him, say maybe I shouldn't vote for this, even though he probably will, but.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's every voter's opportunity to reach out to the legislators if they do not agree with this and voice that opinion.
Well, we have good legislators in Pennsylvania that are fighting to knock this bill down because of some of the reasons that I just spoke about, and people need to get involved, and they need to say, you know, should my son and daughter get the go-ahead to smoke pot, you know, have the excuse that it's legal. And then it's definitely going to be a negative in their life somewhere.
Well, it's there's dangers, and I've talked about it many times on the air here. There's dangers to everyone. If it becomes legal, there's dangers to everyone. Because at the current time, there is no field sobriety test for marijuana. So you will have people legally using edibles, legally smoking marijuana, legally having THC in their system, operating vehicles, operating machinery, operating all sorts of stuff out there that not only endangers themselves, but also endangers anyone around them, anyone on the road, anyone there. You know, and I've discussed that prospect. And if you look at, yes, you know, it's legal in New York State. It's legal in a lot of places around us. Okay, but if you look at the statistics, especially from somewhere like Colorado, where they were one of the first to do it, you know, their accident rates have gone up. Their unemployment rates have gone up. Their issues in regards to it have become worse. So
exactly.
I say look at it as a you know, look at it holistically rather than just a money grab, which it seems like that's what the governor's looking at only.
Yeah, there's a long list in Colorado of things that those people out there are regretting that they ever voted for it. You know, not only that, but, you know, the crime and other aspects of it. And if New York wants to legalize marijuana, we're not New York, and we never want to be New York.
All right, Joe, I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
And like I said, it's a discussion to have, but at least know all the pros and cons, like the specific jobs that you're ineligible for. You know, will you be able to have a concealed carry if you have a marijuana card? These are questions that I think need to be vetted out there for a lot of people before they can even pick a side on what they believe and what they don't believe. Listen, it's not something I'm going to do. Does it affect me? No, it doesn't affect me. Is there going to be any sort of benefit from the tax revenue to us? I think we can all say that's laughable because they promised the same thing with alcohol tax. They promised the same thing with casinos. They promised the same thing over and over again and never, never produce any results for us, the taxpayer. But by having it out there and an additional, and yes, it's very, you know, alcohol does a lot of the similar things just in different ways. There are other things out there that are just as dangerous for the general public. But when you don't have a field sobriety test for alcohol, when you could pop a gummy that has a stronger THC than anything our parents or grandparents ever smoked in their life, and there's no smell, there's no nothing on you whatsoever, you're a danger to the people around you. You're a danger. You know, more of it around is a danger to our children. We've seen time and time again where it's mistaken, you know, by children as a candy. So these are the issues, and I just think that they should do a better job. And I know this is getting further and further in our legislature, and the governor is talking about the revenue aspect of it. I just think there needs to be a serious heart to heart with the populace of Pennsylvania on, you know, here are all the pros and cons that we can give you at this time. Now, we know there's groups that want it. We know the governor wants it because of money. We know, you know, people in the legislature want it because voters, there are a big block of voters that say, hey, you know, I know people have done this. I've done it my whole life. Why cross a state line and get the same stuff that I'm doing anyway? I could just do it here. And why don't we benefit from it? Why don't we know? I get that. But the mere fact, I think if you started telling people, well, you can't do this job, you can't do that job, you can't get this job, you can't do that, you can't carry a firearm, you can't do a lot of things, it may change perspective. So that's the conversation that I think should be had. You know, you want to legalize it? Does it affect me? No, it doesn't affect me, but it does. You know, when I'm driving on the road and there could be someone on the highway next to me, yes, they could be drunk as well. I get that, but okay, why add to it? Why add to it? And add to it in a manner that's even harder to detect. You know, that's my point there. Somebody texted in scare tactics as always. Scare tactics in revolve to what? You know, elaborate. Call. Stop being a coward on a text message line. Call in and talk about, you know, where am I talking scare tactics? Telling the public, telling people who I'm saying could use this if it becomes legal that, hey, here's the downside of some of the things you can't do, some of the jobs you can't hold. If it doesn't affect you, then it's not going to affect them, right? That's not a scare tactic. That's full disclosure. And I just said, you know, alcohol has its same downturns, you know, and we manage that. But there's also ways to detect alcohol where there's not when it comes to marijuana, especially in the forms that marijuana could come in. So the real scare tactic is not wanting to have that conversation, not wanting to have the full disclosure out there. So what we were going to talk about this segment is a Wisconsin mom of two. A Wisconsin mom of two found safe after vanishing without a trace more than 60 years ago. That's right. Audrey Blackburg was 20 years old, living with her husband, Ronald Blackburg, and their two children in Reedsburg, a city about 55 miles northwest of Madison, Wisconsin, when she vanished from her home July 7th of 1962. 1962. For years, investigators with the county sheriff's office had followed leads trying to piece together the mother's disappearance until the case went eventually cold. It becomes what we call a cold case. However, the sheriff's office made a startling announcement this past week that despite all the decades that have passed, Blackburg was found alive and well living in another state. Alive and well. Through diligent investigative work, which included a thorough reevaluation of all case files, evidence, combined with re-interviewing witnesses and uncovering new insights, the sheriff's office is now able to report that Aubrey Blackburg is alive and well and currently resides out of state. Hansen spent weeks re-interviewing. Hansen is the detective in charge with the cold case here. Spent weeks re-interviewing witnesses, re-evaluating all of the evidence, and hunting down new leads to solve this disappearance. The sister actually had an Ancestry.com account, and I was able to use that, said the detective. It was pretty key in locating death records, census reports, and all kinds of data. Ultimately, we came up with an address. So I called the local sheriff's department and said, hey, there's a lady living at this address. Do you guys have somebody who can pop in and interview them and give them my number? 10 minutes later, the missing woman of more than 60 years called the cold case detective. Hansen said he spoke with Blackburg for 45 minutes and told him that she fled from her home on her own for her own safety from her alleged abusive husband. I think she was just removed. And, you know, moving on from things kind of did her own thing and led her own life. She sounded happy, confident in her decision, no regrets, the detective said. Days before, the then 20-year-old mom of two, gone missing in 1962, she filed a criminal complaint claiming Ronald had beaten her so severely that she had head injuries. He also allegedly threatened to murder her and had access to a firearm. Despite reporting the alleged abuse to authorities, Ronald, who she married when she was only 15 years old, remained in the house with her children. She left home to get her paycheck from her job at a woolen mill on July 7th and then never returned, vanished. Ronald chased after leads searching for his missing wife. Her family insisted the young mother would never abandon her children. Following the disappearance, the family's 14-year-old babysitter claimed Blackbird hitchhiked to Madison, then got on a bus to Indiana. However, police tried interviewing the teen about the claim. She got nervous and refused to speak to them. She stated Aubrey had taken a bunch of pills and then put in a Coke can and drank it before taking the bus down to Indianapolis. She reported Aubrey potentially hooked up with some construction workers and may have been in the area. Harrison said the department can confidently report that Blackburn left at her own choice and was never unsafe while being listed as a missing person for the past six decades. He would not reveal what state she was now residing in because she is still in fear from her past. 60 years, woman in an obvious abusive relationship has had enough. Enough so much so she left her two kids and her husband behind for 60 years, started a new life and never looked back. You could just imagine how deeply they must have looked into the husband, knowing that there was a domestic abuse case filed just a week prior to her going missing. I mean, you have to imagine the worst, right? He killed her, dumped the body somewhere. We weren't able to find it. Just goes to show you, cold cases are not always cold. But I guess in the end, you know, a happy ending here. It's 4:22 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Listen, this next text is why we can't have nice things. So I get a text in, you shouldn't talk about weed when you don't know anything about it. Kids won't eat gummies. They taste horrible. Well, then how come we have case after case after case of kids mistaking them for candy if they taste so horrible? And it's just simply not true. And weed stops affecting you like it does when you first smoke it. I don't even know what that means. So when you smoke it and then you go drive, you're fine, as long as you're not smoking it while you're driving. It just doesn't even make any sense. All right, stop the weed, dude, and text in a little more allegedly next time. So, you know, we've had our own issues here, and when I saw this, the age popped right out at me. But migrant Trende Agua-like punks, linked punks, brawl with NYPD cops in Times Square, melee. This just happened. And it's the second time it's happened when Trende Agua, remember, you know, the last time during the winter when we talked about this, but a rowdy mob of Trende Agua-linked gangbangers turned on a pair of NYPD cops right in downtown Times Square, right in the middle of Times Square, in a shocking caught-on-video assault, the second migrant attack on New York's finest and the tourist hotspot in less than 2 years. The cowardly attack came after Friday night's boxing match between Ryan Garcia and Rolly Romero in the crossroads of the world, with two cops jumped while trying to stop the thugs from robbing a pair of youngsters. At least three of the brutes were rounded up by Sunday afternoon, including, get this, including a 12-year-old reputed ringleader. A 12-year-old reputed ringleader. With police saying the mob was linked to Venezuela gang Trende Agua through its baby-faced offshoot crew known as Diablos de la 42, or Devils of the 42nd Street, the sources say. There is a picture of the individuals in the holding cell. It appears to be taken by one of the kids themselves. The alleged juvenile took a selfie while in custody and posted it to social media from the holding cell. The kid taking the picture is literally handcuffed to the bar, and he's picturing three other individuals who were handcuffed to a bench. I guess taking their cell phones is not a standard operating procedure anymore. So one of the thugs, one of the juvenile thugs, took a selfie, posted it to social media after the attacks on NYPD, and they're all flashing gang signs. They're all flashing gang signs. The cocky brats even flashed gang signs, posted pictures on social media while handcuffed inside the Manhattan precinct's juvenile holding area after being busted in the attack. At least three in the mob were already sought for a string of shocking robberies in Central Park and were caught red-handed trying to pull off another heist when two cops intervened, they said. This is what sanctuary cities are supposed to be, one frustrated cop asked. One of these kids was 11 years old, and he was the ringleader of the Central Park robbery pattern. What is it going to take for some policy change when you have an 11, now 12-year-old running around committing these crimes? NYPD spokesperson said Sunday that two of the migrants, 16 and 17-year-old, were charged with obstruction, governmental administration, riot, and menacing, with an older teen also charged with assault on a police officer, reckless endangerment, and criminal possession of a weapon. The sources said 14-year-old was also charged, while the 12-year-old was taken into custody and released pending a family court hearing, with at least three others in the gang under investigation. None of their names were released because of their ages. This is a criminal enterprise of young teenage, not even preteens, 12, 11. Central Park robbery rings, assaulting police in Times Square while they're robbing other juveniles. Put them on a plane, send them off. Their parents want to go with them, they're more than welcome to go with them. Police said the migrants were all living at Manhattan's Row Hotel, one of a dozen sites throughout the Big Apple housing asylum seekers at the taxpayers' expense. We're paying for a criminal enterprise to operate here. We're paying for it. You can't make this up. You literally can't make it up. How about we take the kids, get their parents, kick them out of the hotel, take them to the airport, put them on a plane, and they're gone. No more problem, right? No more ringleader, no more increased victims in New York City. Because these thugs are far from victims. And if they're out there causing these gang robberies and Central Park robbery sprees and Times Square and fighting with police, sorry, you lost any privilege for asylum. You're gone. Your parents are gone. Anyone associated with you is gone. When are we going to wake up? Stop coddling this nonsense. We are literally funding a criminal enterprise of victimhood in Manhattan because of the amount of people they are making victims by robbing them, assaulting them. It's mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. It's 4:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. On this day, four of our heroes made the ultimate sacrifice. Going to start with Lieutenant Eric Allen Eslery. Legionnaire Township Police Department, Pennsylvania, 2015. Was killed in a vehicle collision on Route 30 near Clark Hollow Road at approximately 2 a.m. His patrol SUV was struck head-on by a van driving the wrong way on a divided highway. His canine partner suffered serious injuries and underwent surgery at the Emergency Animal Hospital. The two occupants of the van were also critically injured. The driver of the van was sentenced to 12 to 30 years in prison in early 2017. Detective Paul John Caropel, Allegheny City District Attorney's Office, Investigative Division, 2015, suffered a fatal heart attack while participating in serving of 11 search warrants in Fayette County, Pennsylvania. He and other members of the Federal Narcotics Task Force were serving the warrants when he told his partner he wasn't feeling well, was taken to Uniontown Hospital where he suffered a fatal heart attack at approximately 2:30 p.m. Chief of Police Herman DeWayne Justice, West Taylor Township Police Department, Pennsylvania, 1990, was killed in an automobile accident while involved in a pursuit. He was pursuing a vehicle when his patrol car slid on a patch of wet pavement as he rounded the curve on Cooper Avenue, struck a brick wall. He was a U.S. Navy veteran of the Vietnam War and served West Taylor Township Police Department for 7 years. We have Policeman William McCluskey, Philadelphia Police Department in 1935, was killed in an automobile accident during a vehicle pursuit. The car he was riding in collided with another car and Queen Lane and then struck a utility pole. Policeman McCluskey was thrown from the vehicle and sustained fatal head injuries. Another officer and five bystanders were also injured. He served with the Philadelphia Police Department for 5 years. He was survived by his four children. And those are our four from here in Pennsylvania. It's 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? Certainly, there's plenty of significant events today on May 5th. Let's start at 1961. Alan Shepard became the first American in space on May 5th of 1961. Navy Commander Alan B. Shepard made history becoming the first American to travel into space aboard the Mercury capsule Freedom 7. Shepard's suborbital flight lasted approximately 15 minutes, reaching an altitude of 116 miles. The mission marked a significant milestone for NASA and the United States during the early stages of space race. So, today, Cinco de Mayo, 1862, the Battle of Puebla, the origin of Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo commemorates the Mexican Army's victory over French forces at the Battle of Puebla in May 5th of 1862. While not a major holiday in Mexico, it has become a celebration of Mexican heritage and culture in the United States, featuring parades, music, traditional foods, and most likely specials from your bars and restaurants. So the Battle of Puebla, it's the origin of Cinco de Mayo, but it's not celebrated in Mexico. And it's Mexican Army's victory over the French in a single battle in Puebla. So that's a little bit of the history of Cinco de Mayo. 1925, the Scopes monkey trial begins. On this day, 1925, John T. Scopes was charged in Tennessee for teaching evolution in violation of the Butler Act, which prohibited the teaching of human evolution in state-funded schools. The ensuing trial, also known as the Scopes monkey trial, sparked a national debate over science and religion in education. Again, that was 1925. 1945, Japanese balloon bomb causes fatalities in Oregon. Tragic incident occurred on May 5th, 1945, when the Japanese balloon bomb exploded in Oregon, killing six people. This was the only instance during World War II where enemy action resulted in fatalities on the U.S. mainland. That's news to me. I never even heard of that. 1945. 1973, Secretariat wins the Kentucky Derby. Secretariat, one of the most famous racehorses in history, won the Kentucky Derby on May 5th, 1973, with a record-breaking time of 1:59 2/5, a record that still stands today. What was interesting, and I didn't realize, you know, I thought it was fake news when I first saw it, but every race, every horse in the Kentucky Derby race, the big race, every horse, their lineage can be tracked back to Secretariat in one way or another. That's crazy, huh? Just goes to show you value in a good horse. 1971, largest mass arrest in U.S. history during the Vietnam War protests. May 5th, 1971, during Vietnam War demonstrations in Washington, D.C., over 1,200 protesters were arrested, bringing the total number of arrests over several days to more than 12,000. This remains the largest mass arrest in U.S. history. Some notable birthdays today. Adele, 1988, British songwriter, singer, known for her powerful vocals and hit albums. Henry Cavill, 1983, British actor, recognized for his roles in Superman in the DC Extended Universe. Chris Brown, 1989, American singer, songwriter, and dancer. And that's pretty much what we got today for today in history. Let me see what else we got going. I got some text messages coming in. Hey, Rob, you can watch all the antics and nonsense in New York City, Manhattan, on AMC show The Walking Dead, Dead City. It's not too far from the truth. Yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there. Somebody asked, where the hell are the parents? What a freaking mess. Send them packing. This is about the teenage, young teen, preteen migrants who are committing robbery sprees and assaults on police in New York while living in taxpayer-funded housing. And I agree. I agree. Looking at some other text messages coming in. Somebody else said send them on their way. Yeah, we should. Somebody just texted, Secretary, it was the greatest. I was at the Belmont Stakes victory in 1973 with my dad. Still the greatest sporting event I ever attended. Yeah, I believe they're holding the Belmont Stakes again up in Saratoga Springs because of the construction that have been going on there. And I go to Saratoga Springs racetrack because I have friends who live up there. It's a great day. It's a great day. A lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of tradition, and it's old school, but it's interesting. If you've never had the opportunity to go to one of the better racetracks, highly recommend it. Just a day. You don't have to gamble a lot. You don't have to gamble at all. It's just the experience, the food, the atmosphere. It's pretty fun. We go to a couple a year up there. And there are paintings of Secretariat all over the place at Saratoga Springs. It was one of their home bases. So Yeah, I highly recommend. And it's only, I think it's only like a 3-hour drive for Saratoga if you're up there. And it's definitely a nice day. Crowded, never a dull moment, though. Let me tell you about the Good Feet store, located right here in Scranton on the corner of Route 6 and Commerce Boulevard, across from the Olive Garden. I have had foot pain, leg pain, back pain for as long as I can remember, for at least the past 20 years. I've tried shots, ablations, braces, orthotics, the whole nine yards. And, you know, I figured, let me try the Good Feet arch supports out. They're free. You go for your free test, the free test walk. They're proudly made here in the United States. So I went in for free and tried them out, and then you get them. Yeah, obviously you have to pay for them. The free test walk is there, though. You try them out, and then let it do its magic. I have had no issues for the past 2 years since I've worn them. Talked about 2 weeks ago, I made the mistake of not switching them to my dress shoes, and I paid for it dearly for the next almost week. But then put them right back in, and it guided my ligaments, my muscles to walk the proper way, and no more pain again. You can visit them at 1945 Commerce Boulevard in Scranton. Call them at 570-534-0980. Check them out online at goodfeetstock.com. And like I said, one of the favorite parts that I have is they're proudly made in the USA. So no worries about tariffs or anything like that if that's what you're panicking about lately. But check them out because, like I'm saying, for the past 2 years, they've definitely worked for me. No pain whatsoever. And I couldn't be happier with them. It's 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. Come on, Jake. How am I supposed to talk over this now? Just can't. Can't happen. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:55, 64 degrees on this Monday, May 5th, 2025. So Pennsylvania 2024 traffic fatalities have been the second lowest on record. That's a good thing. That's a very good thing. PennDOT announced the number of people who lost their lives at Pennsylvania highways decreased from 1,127 in 2024, which is the second lowest since record-keeping began in 1928. It's a decrease of 82 compared to 2023. While this decrease in fatalities is good news, even one life lost is too many, PennDOT Secretary Mike Carroll said. PennDOT will continue to work with our partners to decrease traffic deaths throughout education and outreach, but we will only get to zero fatalities when everyone works together. Please pay attention when you're driving. Always follow the speed limit and never drive impaired. Buckle up. Your seatbelt can save your life in a crash, said the secretary. The number of fatalities and impaired driver crashes dropped from 429 in 2023 to 342 last year. That's about 80 in impaired driver crashes. PennDOT annually distributes more than $6.2 million from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration for impaired driving enforcement. Fatalities and lane departure crashes dropped from 629 in 2023 to 537 last year. However, fatalities and intersection crashes increased to 321, up from 301 in 2023. Fatalities and crashes at intersections with a stop sign also increased from 98 in 2023 to 111 last year. They're not wrong saying we need to do our part. We definitely need to do our part as drivers, but you know, they're called accidents for a reason. And when you have things like the acceptance of international CDL driver's licenses now, instead of them being mandated to go through our own system, adds to a lot of those issues. Unfortunately, you know, some of us know people who've been hit where drivers have just disappeared because you know, they're in the wind after the fact. And these trucking companies, and it's not just trucks, it's vehicle accidents as well. Like you said, intersection crashes are up. What's interesting, and I still have yet to get a decent answer, is from Clark Summit, just north of my exit, in exit 202, so to up in Tompkinsville, they repaved 81 in both directions. Gorgeous. Repaved it. It was great. It was flat. It was It was anything you would want a new paved highway to be. Now they have since dug up sections of it, and they're in the process of doing even more up by Scott Township now, both north and south. 2 or 3 dozen times now. They're tearing it up. It's uneven. They're not sealing it properly. The top coat doesn't even cover to the bottom coat to where there's sections where it sees through. Now, I would imagine that all that billions of dollars of infrastructure money went to repave that entire process. And it was not done correctly, obviously. And they're still, years later, picking up the pieces, having to redo it. Has anyone from the government, has anyone from Pennsylvania PennDOT, has anyone from anywhere looked into this and said, what went wrong? Because it was our tax dollars that were spent on the infrastructure bill to repave all that. Remember the big signs? You know, this is brought to you by the infrastructure bill. And we had to put up with one lane being shut down in each direction so they could repave it. All right, we'll deal with the traffic. We'll deal with that. Hopefully something good comes out of it. Now we're talking 4 or 5 years later, and they're tearing it up in sections again because something wasn't done right. And it's not PennDOT. It's other contractors that are doing it. So did they not do the job to begin with? Did they do a faulty job? Was it bad? Are they being held accountable? Were they charged additional fines for not doing the job properly? Is that money going into the tax base so you could do more roads, more intersections? People want to know. It's 5 o'clock.